Blog Talk Radio.
This is Sanakori right here, straight up. This is Taino Radio, and I'd like to welcome all you listeners live and also all you future listeners who have downloaded this show. All shows are archived. Thank you so much. I'd like to thank the world. The world, that's right. We got Australia, Japan, India, just to name a few. Also, Turtle Island, always counting on you, Canada, First Nation, Borinquen, Puerto Rico, we got Jamaica, Santo Domingo, all you beautiful listeners out there checking in. Believe it or not, United Kingdom always in fourth place in the ratings. We see some loud Tainos out there. United Kingdom and Russia always with us since day one. And wow, man, this is going to be a great show because this is the Indigenous Caribbean Study Power Hour. That's right. We have Natalie Huber Rodriguez with us. Are you there, Natalie?
I am here, Sanakori. What's up?
What's up?
That's great. That is awesome, man. How you been feeling? It's been a 2-week layoff, huh? At least 2 weeks?
Yeah, true. But I think after that power, we all needed that break, right?
That's right. Hey, wait a minute. We went live in the powwow, man.
That's right. Took us a few times, but we got it.
You know, a lot of people who heard that show, they thought that we were really partying hard. You know, we were just having old-fashioned fun, right?
Exactly. Just with all the technical hiccups we kept having, it got really funny when we kept having to repeat this like three times.
I think we did 4 takes on that one, right? Finally, we just
I think so. Guillermo had to tell that story four times.
And the miracle was that it was pretty, you know, it kind of expanded a little bit. It was funny.
At that point, I was like, yo, we could all tell this story at this point.
See, man, the folklore has begun. Right? It began right there.
Exactly. Now we can all tell the story of the telling of that story.
That's right. I will never forget that his grandfather gave the keys to this man who, you know, so he can feed his family as a taxi driver, right?
That's right. His grandfather was a very generous, very well-known man in their village, apparently, to the point where, when he went back so many years later, people there still remembered, and their children remembered.
Yeah, that's a powerful. Yeah, that was powerful. Can't make that stuff up. Glad we finally got it. Yeah, right. And it was history too because we had Scary Steph from the paranormal show.
That's
was
right.
Present.
Yeah, it was great to meet her in person finally.
Yeah, so that was very historical. That was fun. Hope we do it again, right?
Absolutely, that was a great time. It was a small powwow, but I think it was just big enough, you know, with coming out of COVID and all, for a lot of us, it was our first post-COVID powwow.
Right, that's right. I mean, you weren't there the second day, but we still got a good turnout the next day, too. Oh, that's beautiful. How was the weather? Well, it was nice?
Oh, yeah, it was nice on Saturday, I think, but then on Sunday it was even nicer. It got up into the 80s.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, I got a little sunburned.
Wow. Oh, yeah, I got a little you know, since I cut my hair, I got a little burn on my top there. So, like,
oh no, oh no.
That was weird. I was scratching all week. The sunburn.
I feel you.
Trying to grow my hair.
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah. Oh yeah, trying to go,
you know,
go grow long again.
Oh man, it's gonna take me a couple of years to get it back. But it's what happens when you cut your own hair. You make mistakes and gotta cut it all off. So,
I don't know, man.
I said that since I was a kid.
That's it.
My mother had a heart attack.
Oh, word? She's serious? She was like, what?
Yeah, oh, yeah, because I, you know, when you're a kid, you're screwing around. I was like,
I'm
going to
cut
my own hair. I was like
4 years
old,
3 years
old,
3 years old.
And I cut the bang straight across, you know what I mean?
Oh, man.
Yeah, I had these, like, long black bangs, and I just took, like, kitchen scissors, and I don't even know what I did. Because
I know because there's pictures
of it. My mom tried to fix it a little somehow, but you can definitely tell.
Wow. Well, you know, when I cut my hair all off, buzzed it off, I saved some of my hair and I did like a prayer, you know, the Oprah message, you know, you make a promise.
Oh, good. Yeah, yeah.
Good.
Good on you.
Yeah, so I made a little ritual, you know, trying to.
Yeah.
You know,
hair.
We
can
do a whole
episode
about
hair.
Hair.
And
indigenous
people, and
you know
how important it is to so many American cultures,
including
our own.
Oh yes, definitely, definitely. And you know, a lot of people were upset that I did that. A lot of people. You know, I actually, there's one person that I rarely talk in my job. Really talked to her, and she made a comment about my hair. She's like, "Oh, it looks cool, but you had that cool haircut, like in Puerto Rico." You know, with the long hair in the back and short in the front kind of thing. And I kind of felt bad because it's the Boricua mullet, right? So I felt bad, you know, like, oh, man. Talks to me, but she commented on that. Like, oh, I like the old style. I'm like, oh, man. So
it's funny how
personal,
like, people get about it, even when, like, when
people
whose hair it isn't,
you know.
Right. Yeah. You know what?
Definitely
a
very personal thing.
It is personal.
Yeah,
let's do an episode on
here. I'm making a note of that right now.
That's good, right? Because that's one thing I always, when I first came into the movement, you know, that was a big issue, you know, long hair, short hair, facial hair.
Right.
You know, I mean, I was in a group where you couldn't have facial hair. So that was one of the
mandates. Oh, yeah.
And then it got into the hairstyles, certain hairstyles. So I'm like, whoa. So, yeah, I was introduced to that in the beginning. So, and me being a rebel, you know, but to the opposite. You know?
Right. That's why I
cut
my
hair
as a kid.
There you go. But, wow. But today we're going to discuss about a language, the restored Taino languages.
Yes.
Dialects.
Oh, yeah, so I was just going to give a little brief intro to languages in general actually have their own study called linguistics in anthropology. It's one of the four sub-branches of anthropology I discussed before, but it's also its own thing, too. Like, it can be its own independent study as well.
So basically,
no, I said good. Good, right.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I think you cut out for a second for me for some reason.
No.
So the study of linguistics is very complex because obviously the language itself is a very complex thing to us as people. And, you know, the origin of spoken and written language goes way, way back. But let's break it down for a second. Most languages, or pretty much all known languages today, belong to greater language families. So, for example, let's say Spanish.
Right.
But Spanish is technically in a family or group of languages called the Latin-rooted or Latin-based languages. Sometimes better known as Romance languages, and the other languages in that branch are Italian, Portuguese, French. And even Romanian, weirdly enough. So all those languages have kind of a common root language. And so they're sort of related in some way. It doesn't mean we can all understand each other, right? Like I can't understand a French person, but there's commonalities, there's similarities we see with them. And even that Latin-rooted family is part of a bigger family of interrelated languages called the Indo-European languages. All languages, all in Western Europe, Eastern Europe, and even some common roots that they come from. Wow. So, it's, yeah, you don't think about that. You know, you never think that your language is related to Hindi, what they speak in India, or even that German and English are in the same language family, technically, but they are. Much more connected than we realize. So the Taíno language is part of a family of languages called the Arawakan languages. And a lot of people, I think, were familiar with that word, right? Arawakan.
You know what? I'm gonna hold on for this. I'm gonna take a short pause, okay? I got some feedback from some people that they're hearing an echo.
So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna put on a saw,
and I want to work on the studio stuff here. See if I can improve that.
All right, you do that. Yeah, because I've been trying hard to ignore.
Yeah, so I'm gonna. The singer is called Angel Manuel Rosado. He actually did an album. It's called Taíno Borinquenaiki, which is interesting. This is the same title of, Javier Hernandez's book. So I'm going to play his song and see what I could do in the controls here, okay? And this song is called El Semi. So he's using the Borinquenaiki dialect, okay? So I'll play it. It's called El Semi, the Semi. And I'll get back to you, okay?
All right, sounds good.
All right, cool. Thank you.
cool song. What you think about that, Natalie?
That was awesome. I was really enjoying it. I think we fixed the echo problem a little bit. I don't hear myself as much anymore.
Okay, that's great. I actually emailed the people from the studio. Not email, but there's a chat, you know, and they suggested some things. So you don't hear yourself as much?
No, I don't. It's great.
Okay, I think we got it worked.
I was getting tired
yeah, that
listening
was...
to me. I don't know how y'all feel, but.
Well, one of our listeners, Elba, she wrote me, you know, right away and told me about it. Thank you, Elba, if you're listening.
Yeah,
so,
thank you, everyone. Bad enough
yeah,
to
man.
Hear me twice, you know.
That's right. So yeah, man, I found this album online, Amazon, you know, and we'll talk more about the music, but go ahead, continue on.
Oh, okay, geez, where was it? Yeah, maybe that music is the thing that helped ultimately, right? That cured his spirits hurt him.
Hey, man. I know. Well, I had to give a shout-out to Elba Iris and
exactly.
for helping us out. Okay,
yeah,
so
absolutely.
Cool, man. So,
all right, so
go for it.
I'm
yes.
trying to remember. I got so into the
oh,
music.
Oh, yeah, you were talking
now,
about
the
languages. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so I was saying how... So technically, all European languages, with the exception of actually Hungarian and Finnish and Estonian, and that's a whole different story because they're from kind of a branch off of Indo-European languages, but all languages from Western Europe to all the way to the Indian subcontinent are technically related. They all have a common root or mother tongue, as we call it in anthropological terms. So with Taino, in terms of the language, I was talking about language family. So like Spanish is in the Latin-rooted language family. English is in the Germanic languages, actually, believe it or not. English is related to German, to all the Nordic languages, Dutch, etc. So Taino is in the Arawakan family of languages, and I think I was saying right. Arawakan is a term we're all familiar with, right? Or most of us are familiar with to some degree, right?
Right.
Right. So the Arawak are described as a ethno-linguistic group of people. What that means, ethno-linguistic, means multiple groups of people who share a common kind of culture, but also a common language, sort of, or languages that are interrelated. Know what I mean? So that for us, that's the Taino, but all the way down to other indigenous people of South America, and even some branches that went into Central America as well. So like a lot of the indigenous tribes of present day Ecuador, Uruguay, places like that kind of have in even Venezuela as well. I could keep going on.
Okay.
For who were the original Arawakan speaking people. Another term for Arawakan is Maipurian. I'm not quite sure where that term came from, but it's just another term from the language family as well. So if you you can actually look, I'm looking at a map right now of where the Arawakan languages were most prevalent. And from what I can tell, it's through the Caribbean. And of course, we know the Taino spoke Arawakan language, and Taino is an Arawakan language, but also the northeastern kind of coast of South America, especially as well, and then even down further south into kind of more western, western central South America, you know, in more in that kind of rainforested area. There's some patches
okay.
of Arawakan-speaking people too.
Beautiful.
Right. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, go ahead.
No, I'm just thinking of, is that part of also the Wayuu, right? The Wayuu is part of the Arawakan, right? The Wayuu.
Spell that for me.
W-A-Y-U-U, the Wayuu.
W-A-Y-U-U, and that, you mean the Wayuu tribe?
Yeah, they use the Arawakan, yep. One of the Arawakan dialects.
Yes, that's absolutely right. They are part of they too are part of the Arawakan language family or Maipurian language family. They are Colombian and Northwest Venezuelan. So yes, they are definitely in that too. There's a ton of tribes. Sadly, some of them aren't around so much anymore. But there's tons of tribes who spoke an Arawakan derivative language. There's a tribe called the Arawa, the Boramuani, the Guajibo, Harakmet. I'm looking at like a ton of tribes all through South America and even parts of Central America as well who are in that common language family.
Okay.
So that, you know, itself shows kind of a little bit of, you know, a common origin or at least some relation between these people, right? I mean, because languages usually all come from one mother tongue. So Makro Arawakan, as we would call it. It's really speaks to, you know, just how widespread people of who were related to the Taino really were. And even within Taino itself, there's kind of two main branches of Taino language that at least we're familiar with. Those are the classic or Eastern Taino, as we call it, and that's what's spoken in Boriken, of course, and these are were also in the Lesser Antilles as well. So Turks and Caicos, for example, they spoke that that Eastern or classic Taino. Most in Central Hispaniola, as we talked about, which is today Haiti and the Dominican Republic, and then even the eastern tip of Cuba, where my ancestors are from. But then there's also this, which comes into play for me, because it's called Siboney or Western Taino, and I technically am of Siboney Taino descent. So Siboney is spoken mainly more, you go further west towards Cuba and everything, you're going to hear that dialect, and that's going to be spoken in the majority of Cuba, except for that eastern tip I talked about that was being Eastern or classic Taino, and was also spoken in a lot of the Lucayan tribal areas as well. If you're familiar with the Lucayan people, they were inhabiting the Bahamas, and that was spoken in that area as well, this kind of Western dialect. This was also in Jamaica, or Yamaka, as we call it, Haiti, and most of the islands of the Bahamas spoke this dialect. It's hard to say whether classic Taino and Siboney Taino are, whether or not they were mutually intelligible, meaning they could be spoken and understood by people of both groups. Based on what I've read of it, it looks like they were. I mean, they clearly weren't exactly the same, but it seems because there was so much traveling between the islands and they were so close in proximity, and especially after, you know, Spanish invasion, there was a lot of unison between different groups from different islands. It does seem that they would have been mutually intelligible. It just would have been a slightly different dialect would be the way I would describe it, you know?
Okay. Interesting. In any of your studies, did you come across any sign language as a means of the different tribes communicating with each other, sign language?
In terms of Taino, personally haven't. But you're absolutely right. That was definitely something that was utilized a lot by a lot of indigenous Americans. Particularly, we have evidence of a lot of tribes in North America in the Great Plains using sign language, but also in the Eastern Woodlands as well as a way of communication with other tribes who may not have spoken the same language or a related language. It was a tool that was used by multiple tribes all over the Americas. I personally haven't come across any hard evidence of the use of sign language among different Taino groups to communicate with each other, but, you know, that does not mean it didn't happen. I would probably err on the side that it did, and you know, I mean, again, it's hard to find hard evidence of something like that, because most of our sources come from very limited and biased perspectives and outside perspectives, you know, so we can't really find a lot of reliable things that say, oh, are they using sign language or were they just gesturing kind of thing? But
right.
I believe it was definitely possible, absolutely.
Because the reason I say that, because I know that in our modern society, in our contemporary lifestyles, it seems like, you know, in Caribbean culture, we still use, we have like this sign language that we use. And the most famous one is when you greet someone, it's like you point with your nose almost, like you bend
right,
your
head.
Right,
the head up and, you toss the head up kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, and I find that's still very much alive. I know in Puerto Rico, when I go there, Borinquen, a lot of people do that. And they don't even, they don't say hello or anything. Or hola, you know, they do with their head. And I work in East Harlem, which a lot of Puerto Ricans are still in East Harlem. And even strangers, like when we make a connection somehow, I'll use that head gesture. And it's like, wow, man, even people like in the waiting room, like, you know, they're waiting for me or something. I'll do it like spontaneously, and they'll do it too.
Yeah, like, it's funny, right? Yeah, no, I know exactly. As soon as you mentioned that, I knew exactly what you were talking about, because yeah, it just kind of it happens, you know. The other thing, I don't know if they do this in Borinquen or anything, but in Cuba we whistle a lot too. Y'all do that?
Oh, whistle? Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We call it pitando, pito, el pito.
Yeah, yeah, we use so much whistling, like for getting someone's attention or to, like, you know, to gesture towards something, to, you know, and whistling itself is even a part of language as well, because obviously, you know, even in English, different whistles mean different things, right? Like you hear a certain type of whistle, like, you know, that's like a catcall type whistle, whereas if you go just I can't even do it now, my lips are too dry, but if you just go like woo or something, like that's kind of like a wow or oops or kind of thing. So, and it's funny, even on the subject of whistling, there's an area, the Gomero Islands in Spain, and they speak an entire language of just whistling called Silbo Gomero, and the way it developed was because the islands are very, they have these really deep valleys and really kind of, it's very like mountainous sort of, and these villages are built up on these very steep kind of like hilly sides of these mountains. So to communicate, people would just, instead of, you know, walking all the way down to, you know, your buddy's house or something, you just be from where you were at your house and you whistle down the mountain and people hear you and you can say like a whole sentence or something. Like I was watching a whole video of them doing it, and they were saying something like, oh, you know, so-and-so's mother died, the funeral is tomorrow at this time, all just in whistling, in the way they whistle. And they still do it, and it's crazy.
Yeah, I see that in Borinquen all the time, the different whistle. You know, I hear it. Especially, you know, wow, it does bring back memories. Even as a kid, the different people that I looked up to, like elders or people.
Yes, I remember my great uncle using it all the time. Yep.
Yeah, and I still remember this one. Is it?
Yep.
You know, that was like to get someone's attention. You know, like
right,
from a distance
or
something. They wouldn't yell. They'll
whistle.
Instead
of like calling out, you whistle. Yeah, exactly. Instead of calling, shouting, we do that too, of course. But but whistling was to get attention or to signal something. I remember when I was in Cuba one time, I was snorkeling with my friend, and we were supposed to come back in, but he was like out kind of far, so like he didn't know. Like, you know, we were all like, "Oh, where's Raulette? Oh, he's still in there." It's like, "Oh, somebody's got to go in and get him." But then his uncle just like whistled really loud. And even though he was under the water completely with just the snorkel up, he immediately popped his head up and he knew what was going on.
That's right. Oh, man.
So, yeah, the whistling definitely, I mean, can be a language of its own.
Yeah, man, you got me to think now. That's right. It's bringing back some memories of the whistling.
Yeah.
You know,
I remember that one.
So I can't. I got gap teeth, so I can't really whistle that well with my lips.
I know,
but
I
suck it in.
My lips are so dry right now.
I'm using you, so I can't whistle loud,
go.
But yeah. Yeah, it's different ones, man, you know, like, oh, man, it's bringing my memories. Thanks for bringing that up, but that's language, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, wow, this is so cool. Oh, you know, one gesture, too, that's famous. When you're at a dinner table, son, and, you know, when someone to pass the food or something, you point with your lips. You know, you don't do that head gesture again, like popping the head back, but also you point with your lips, like, you know, it's like, man, that's so indigenous, though, right?
Right, like, absolutely. You know, they always talk about the Indian head nod. You ever heard of that? Like, where, like, a lot of Native people, like, instead of, you know, saying anything or shaking hands, even you just do like you acknowledge someone with your eyes and you do like a really quick kind of sharp nod, you know, like not even a full one, just like a quick like.
Yeah, that's it, man. This is what. Oh man, you know, in my first experience with Indigenous people with a Crow Nation. The Crow had similar
lots of
gestures.
Head
nods. Yes, and I recognized it right away. Like, wait a minute. I don't get it. I understand what they're doing, and that's when the whole subject of I spoke to the elder there, and he was telling me about that they had their own sign language, and then I was like, but I recognize it, you know.
Right. It's funny how that works.
Yeah, so it's like, wow, this is something that's real interesting, the connections among thousands of miles away.
And that head nod. That head nod is universal, I feel like, because even at the powwow, like, you know, when you'd pass by another Native person, like, even if you didn't have time to stop and talk, like, I was getting it all the time and doing it to, you know, I mean, like anyone else in regalia or anything, you know, it just happens, right? It's kind of like a polite way of acknowledging other people who are Native without, you know, having to stop and say, have a whole conversation. And I remember even when the COVID first broke out, one of my Native friends who's Navajo even posted this really funny meme, because it was like, okay, with COVID, we can't, you know, shake hands or hug or nothing, so get ready for a lot of Indian head nods, you know, completely contact-free.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting, I'm just thinking right now out loud, you know, I'm a big baseball fan. You look at films in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s even, you know, very serious players. And then when you get to the 90s, late 80s, 90s, when a lot of the Dominican ball players were being recruited, as well as
Cuban
the Puerto Rican
too,
players, they started with that whole hand gesture. They started doing that whole hand signal stuff. Like, you know, like Sammy Sosa was famous for touching his heart, touching his lips, and facing him. And now I'm thinking, these are Caribbean people. They're doing sign language. They're doing, you know?
Absolutely.
And I'm thinking now out loud, can this be an indigenous influence into their game?
I fully believe so. Yeah, absolutely. Especially like when you think of colonized people, you know, where other people were like strangers were coming into their lands who obviously didn't speak their language. So you got to think in those first early days of colonization where no one spoke, there was no translators at that point, right? Because nobody knows the other person's language yet. No one's had the chance to learn. So what's everyone communicating through, if not sign language probably, or you know, facial expression, hand gestures, pointing, and even modern day sign language. You know, when I was in D.C., we have one of the biggest universities for the deaf and hearing impaired. It's called Gallaudet University. So I had a few friends who worked there who were part of the deaf community, and they were telling me how sign language is not even just hand gestures. It's also facial expression and body language are just as important as those hand motions that they move, those really intricate hand motions. They said, yeah, it's all part of it. And they even consider sign language to have its own culture, you know what I mean? And the deaf community to have their own culture through their sign language because it is its own language.
That's wonderful. I just got a chat. Someone in the Facebook page, they mentioned, I always use whistling to communicate. That's Miss Suarez here. Right. That's it. She's like weird. There you go. It's
yep,
the connection.
Yep. That's something that always, yeah, every time I'm in a group with, and even like my one of my best friends is Mexican. I've been around her family, and even they do it too, you know? So, I mean, we're talking like Caribbean and everything, but maybe it goes beyond it. It does relate to more like indigenous people of the Americas in general, because that does seem to be a common thing, at least for people from Latin America, especially that whistling.
That's amazing. You know, I did this instinctually of, for you Mexicans out there listening, you know, whenever I go to a forest at night to do ceremonies, either with myself or a group, I always whistle. And I'll just repeat that. And that came to me instinctually, maybe listening to birds and stuff.
You almost sounded like a coquille at one point.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, there
sometimes
you go.
I do that
too.
Sort of.
Right. Because that's a very whistle sound to me, yeah.
Yeah, so what happened, I read somewhere that there's some tribes that they avoid whistling because it calls negative spirits, you know. So when I read that,
really?
I was like, oh, that's
all
interesting.
Right.
They interpret it as a negative way. But I still do it, and I get good results, you know. Sometimes
even
the birds will respond.
Yeah, I was going to say, does anyone ever answer you?
Yeah, sometimes the birds will. And it's like dead silent at times.
A male bird out there thinking he's gonna hook up or something.
Yeah, right. You're right. Yep. But then I go.
He's like, oh man, there's a hot girl around here. She's giving the signal.
I know, man. That's it. But
yeah, you better.
I know. But instinctually, I'll do it. I'll do it to call upon the spirits of the land. You know, that came instinctually to me, and I read different cultures do that as well. So,
right, yeah, absolutely, and it's beautiful. Like when I was listening to the Silva Gomero language, like people saying these whole sentences in, you know, just different whistles, and a lot of times, you know, it'll depend on they put their fingers in their mouth or they hold their lips a certain way to get these different intonations, like. You would never think whistling could get so complex, but oh God, it does. Like,
I'm so glad
impressive.
You mentioned that.
Well, because when you were talking about, all like Caribbean people do that, I was like, yeah, they do. And sometimes there's a whistle with it too. That's what I remember at least growing up.
Right. You know, many years ago, I had a lecture. Antonio Arroyo Stevens, the one that wrote the book, The Cave of the Hagua. I took his wife gave a class on society and spirituality and society. And he gave a little lecture. He was a guest speaker. And he started talking about the Taino languages in Dominican Republic, Quisqueya. And he was talking about that Ramon Pané, who was sanctioned by Columbus, you know, to
learn about our
ancestral worldview, so he can better understand our ancestors, so he can, you know, the whole divide and conquer thing, you know, and...
Right.
So that's the first time that I heard that Pané really didn't know the general Taino language that was spoken. He called it the trade language. That's how he referred to it. Where they were used to trade all these different tribes, you know, who had different dialects.
Right.
But that Pané only knew a local dialect, which was, I think, the Macori language, the Macori. And he actually recruited Juan Mateo, who was his interpreter. So it was actually Juan Mateo, which was actually doing all the translation. And Juan Mateo... I always refer to him as Guatibaba, but it's a different word, different name. I'm looking for it right now in my notes. But have you come across that? There was a lot of dialects in the island, and then there was a general language. Go ahead, huh?
I should have mentioned that before. I have come across that, of it being referred to as like a trade language or among another group of tribes that I talked to, that I learned about from the Pacific Northwest, they called it like the common tongue or something, which was a very basic common language used, like you said, by multiple tribes who spoke multiple dialects, but it wasn't as extensive. It basically only applied to certain words that had to do, like you said, the vocabulary, from what I could see, had to do with trading, so a lot of words for certain objects, but also a lot of words for, you know, talking about if you needed help, say, in a battle or something, you need you need assistance, or you need this, you need that. So, yeah, they called it, like, the common tongue basically was not the same as you would use back home, say, in your village, or for us in your Yukayeke, but if you're going out, it was all kind of expected that everybody who was going to trade or going to interact with people from these other tribes would use this common talk. And I think so when you say the trade language, that I'm assuming that's probably the Taino or Caribbean equivalent. And I think that's true. Even like today, like we talk about certain professions have a language of their own, you know, like my parents were lawyers and my brother's in law school right now. And they call it, you know, legal terminology, which with all these words that that lawyers use and people in the legal profession use, or business terminology, people who are business men and women, and the words that they use when it comes to business and marketing. So I don't think, you know, it's interesting to bring it up, but I think that's something that's still very, very much alive today. You know, there's this idea that we're going into a space or a forum with people from all these different backgrounds. The purpose that we're there for, whether be it trade, be it law, be it business, whatever, there's a common language that we can all speak so that we can all kind of relate to each other in that sense, you know?
Right. Okay, I know the man's name is called Juan Mateo Guatikabanu.
Oh, that's a mouthful.
Yeah, and he was the one that helped. He was the translator for Juan Pané. Unfortunately, he was killed by the other Taino. He was killed. So most likely, you know, he was writing these, you know, our creation stories. He was translating them into Spanish, because Juan Mateo knew how to read and write in Spanish and speak it.
Right.
He was the first Taino to ever learn. So I remember Antonio
first
was
to
saying
learn
that
Spanish or to learn written language.
Yeah,
written language as well.
Speak it, write it, and read it. So
right.
That's why he became the translator. So the theory is that Juan Mateo was actually the one that wrote the creation stories. It wasn't Ramon Pané. But then when they killed him, Pané had no clue what he was reading. That's why he says, I don't know what comes first. I don't know what comes last.
Right, yeah.
He just put his name to the work,
hard.
Which was incomplete. So God knows what we would have learned if Juan Mateo would have continued the writing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I remember I took that lecture. It was pretty interesting when I heard that. And he actually called Juan Mateo the first anthropologist in the Americas because he
first
anthropologist because he studied the Spanish. You know, they were studying us, but he was also studying the Spanish. So
goes both ways, right?
It goes both ways. So.
Yeah, all right. I'm going to tell that to my anthropology colleagues now. I'm going to be like, you know, the first actual anthropologist in the Americas was a Taino.
Yeah, look at it. Yeah,
forget
if you look at it, right?
Boaz and all these other guys. It was this guy.
Yeah, because he actually, and he was also the first linguist because he learned Spanish.
Yeah, there you go, first linguist. Right, and you know, you can only imagine. I mean, it's hard enough right now to learn another language, but to learn a language that, especially when you come from a people, because we know that Taino had no written language, which was true for most indigenous tribes. We relied on oral tradition, right? Even the concept of writing and reading, imagine how difficult that must have been when you're trying to learn a new language, and also you find out that you know, writing itself is almost another language separate from the spoken one, right? Because
that's
you'll talk to some people who can speak a language perfectly, but maybe they can't read and write it, or, you know, because we know people speak English, but not everyone can read or write English, right? And even myself, you know, Spanish is my second language, but sometimes when I'm writing it, I always, like, I'm like, oh, wait, how would I spell that? You know, like, I take a, I can't write
right.
it as fluidly, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. So what do you think about the modern, the contemporary attempt to bring back the language? Because
I think
guess
it's
the talk
pretty,
is always...
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty amazing. It's a big undertaking, let me tell you, first of all. And we discussed before how we both know people in our respective communities or people we've known who have taken up this undertaking of reconstructing the language. You know, I mentioned we have a whole project for it in Hiwayawa. You were talking about in Nahuake, the same kind of thing. And let me tell you, it is to reconstruct a language that has been so oppressed for so long and also has no written form, and also it's hard to find people who speak it fluently, that is a big, big undertaking. And the reason I know kind of, and you know, before I got into learning about the Taíno language reconstruction, I was living in Ireland and studying and working abroad there. And the Irish language had a similar kind of thing happen to them, because when the Irish were first conquered by the English, like 700 some years ago, they were forbid from speaking their native Gaelic language, or Irish Gaelic as we call it. So it was completely outlawed. It was oppressed. It was suppressed. It was against the law to speak it. You could get in a lot of trouble. And it had no written form either, because it came from ancient Celtic people who didn't have a written language at the time. So it wasn't until long after, you know, there were still some people who spoke it, like in small pocketed regions of the country, but you had to be real careful about it. But it wasn't until Ireland finally got its independence, you know, in the early 1900s, and then eventually in the 1920s, there was a really big push to kind of bring back or revitalize and modernize also the Irish Gaelic language. So what they had to do then was all these scholars and people had to go back and not only rediscover this language, but update it too, because now there's a ton of new words, right, from 700 years ago that we didn't have before.
Exactly.
So we got to update too. We got to make up new words in some sense. And then not only that, we also have to create a written form of it, because there was no written form. So what they had to do was standardize it to the, they went off the Latin alphabet, you know, the one that we're familiar with, and come up with spelling, come up with, you know, grammar rules and accents and everything. And of course, come up with a lot of new vocabulary that did not exist before. Thankfully, though, they did have some people who still spoke fluent Gaelic, and some people that was their preferred language. So it was a little easier to do that. It still took a long time, and it became such a big undertaking that now in Ireland, it's mandatory that every school child's Irish and takes Irish from years like 6 through 12 of school. So like junior high through high school. One of your main subjects, in addition to English, you know, literature, math, science, history, is going to be Irish language too, because they want everyone to be able to learn it and speak it, since
That's
it was oppressed for so long. And they've also, you know, they've put it on signs, they put it in written form. You'll see it everywhere when you go there. Like English is still the main preferred language because it's everyone's so used to it. And it's more universal than Irish Gaelic, but you'll see Irish Gaelic everywhere. They have an Irish Gaelic only schools. They have Irish Gaelic only neighborhoods called Gaeltacht regions, Irish only TV channel, radio station, etc. So that showed me, like when I was reading about that, I was like, wow, this was a big undertaking, and I can't even imagine, you know, this language that was so old. But now with the reconstruction of Taíno, I'm seeing some of those similar patterns in terms of having to invent new vocabulary, of course, having to come up with, you know, spelling, like, we, because again, the Taino had no spelling, so we can only, we're going, again, by the Latin alphabet of how we think something should be spelled, right? Based on how it sounds and what makes the most sense. And
right.
also, we're doing a lot with loan words, like, you know, say there's no term for something, so we'll take it from a related language, let's say, like another Arawakan dialect or something that we do have a word for in that sense. And so, obviously, this reconstructed Taino language that is still in the process of being made today, of course, it's not going to be exactly the same as it was, you know, back before Columbus came, right? But I don't really think that's a problem, because I would say that's true for every language, even if it wasn't oppressed or suppressed for a long time like the way Taino was. Because we don't, I mean, English isn't even spoken the same way it was hundreds of years ago, you know? Try reading Shakespeare if you don't believe me, but and you'll see that. So language, like, because it is a part of culture, is always changing and always evolving. So.
Yeah.
You know, I hear some people talk about with language reconstruction and with Taino language reconstruction, they're like, oh, well, we're kind of, you know, doing a lot of guesswork here, and we're sort of fudging it a little. This isn't, you know, this isn't technically true Taino or true how it would have been back then. And when it's like, okay, yeah, that's fair, but, you know, that's just the nature of the beast, really. I mean, the fact that we even have so many words. Still, like, from, again, we talk about we are a people who was almost considered extinct, right? And our language was considered extinct. So the fact that we still have so much vocabulary that we can work with that give us kind of a foundation, at least, to build off of is really freaking impressive when you think about it, you know?
Well, I got a story to share. I discovered this once I started getting involved in Nahuake, and a lot of people don't know this. But in Puerto Rico, Borinquen, in the Department of Education, there's three official languages on the books, okay? One is Spanish, English, and the Nahuake dialect. It's an official language accepted by the Department of Education. It's a complete language system.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and Dr. Yare Melendez, she never really made that public. She was very modest about that. But I was able to see her works, her complete work, what she did with the language. You know, she went to learn linguistics as an anthropologist.
Right.
And she was very, how can I put this, she was very guarded as well. Like, she had a elementary and secondary language systems, you know, levels. And you learned it through the school system, through her program. For the last, 15 years or so. And I remember I went to the classroom for the first time, and these kids were speaking the dialect. I could not answer them, and I was very, very embarrassed because she introduced me as an activist, as a Bejique, whatever, and whatever limited knowledge I knew of the language, you know, I couldn't speak to these kids. I was overwhelmed, like, wow, this is like – And it was a surprise she gave, you know, she did that on purpose, you know, she set me up. And, yeah, so I remember when the director of, wait, hold on a second, he was the congressional representative or congressional leader for the Department of Education in Puerto Rico. We were trying to fight for a school. These abandoned schools, you know. And they came to the school. And she specifically picked the kindergartners. They needed to visit the kindergartners. And she said that was her best class, that they soak up the language really fast.
Oh, yeah, I believe that the younger you are, the quicker, you know, your mind with languages really picks up. That's why they say, like, it's better to teach to learn younger, you know.
So she told us she already had trained the kids when they come into the classroom, speak nothing but Nahuaqueño. Don't speak Spanish. You know?
That's great.
Or answer back in Nahuaque. And that's what happened. And they were like shocked, like, wait a second, what are these kids speaking? She said, they're speaking Taino in Nahuaque. And they're like,
that's
what?
So, cool.
so
That's amazing.
So eventually it did become an official language, but now with her death, we're trying to scramble how can we continue that momentum. She did leave behind her works. And, you know, she went to Venezuela, she went to Colombia, she spent time with the tribes there, the Arawakans. She did go to the Guarifuna. She went with the Kalinago. She spent time with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
where she uses a lot of the words from the Kalinago, and
right,
what they call
it,
a.k.a.
Related,
the Carib.
Yeah.
Good maternal
right, right,
line.
Because they're closely
line.
Related. So, yeah, they're very good for loan words.
Yeah. And it's interesting because when they did the National Geographic, they did DNA with the Kalinago
mm-hmm.
and Nahuake. Yare had a match. One of the women there had a DNA match. And then a lot of the students also had DNA matches with the Kalinago. So that's the...
I believe it.
There's the connection. So...
Yeah. Yeah, that's
so maybe,
cool. Puerto Rico has definitely
uh-huh.
been so...
Uh-huh.
I feel... I've read so many cool things about, like, Puerto Rico, what the Puerto Rico specifically has done with the restoration of the Taino language and teaching it in schools, even, you know, that it is a subject that you
yeah.
can learn in some public schools as well, or universities,
well,
I think is pretty amazing.
Well, this is what I'm saying, that the Nahuatl dialect is officially in the education department, it's officially accepted. Only thing is now, you know, we gotta advocate more and more now in Puerto Rico. Because there's a lot
yeah,
of opponents
yeah.
against it. So,
that's
I don't know.
But, I mean, the fact that the work at least has been done and there's, you know.
Right.
I mean, of course, there's more to do, but there's a lot
oh,
of.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, that's, you're right. That she doesn't get enough credit for that.
Well, it's on purpose, too. She's very guarded. She didn't want to share too
mm-hmm.
much. Because
that's
she,
fair.
You know. And she was afraid of exploitation, too, another thing that was a concern of hers.
Yeah,
and I used
yeah.
to argue with her sometimes, like, come on, we got to get it out there. But she just was very careful, you know. Very careful.
Right, right. Well, that's, yeah,
but,
as we talked about before, some, you know, indigenous people are more guarded and careful because the fear mm-hmm. of exploitation, especially.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know what I think is awesome, and kind of getting low on time here, but I just think it's the coolest thing
yes.
That so many Taino words are still used in English today, you know, in modern English and modern Spanish as well, but even words like
oh,
barbecue,
word.
Yeah, like barbecue we know comes from the Taino barbacoa. The word Caribbean comes from the Arawakan word Carib. The word canoe comes from our word canoa. Hammock comes from our word hamaca. Hurricane
right.
from we know our god of the storm, Urucan.
Mm-hmm.
Maize for corn comes from the plant, the maíz plant that we use. Even the word potato, apparently, because we called it patata for like a sweet
right.
potato, you know?
Real sweet.
Tobacco, forgot that one too. Yeah, tobacco, yep. So it's always, and you know, that's not just for English too. Like that's for like a lot of European languages because things like the word like hurricane didn't even exist before the Taino were discovered because there were no hurricanes in Europe. That's a very new world thing. So... I even asked, you know, my good friend is Norwegian, and I said, okay, what's your word for hurricane? And he went Orkan, O-R-K-A-N, which is their Norwegian word. And I said, oh, okay, well, and I heard it right away, and I said, you know, that technically comes from a Taino word because our word was Urucana, for the storm god, and then the Spanish took it and made it Urucana, and then when they went back to Europe, I guess, it spread through the other European nations. And so now all the way up in Norway, they were using that word because of us.
Look at that.
Same with corn, same with potato. Like it's just, you know, it's amazing how pervasive it is. So
mm-hmm.
it's like people talk about, you know, the Taino language being extinct and the people being extinct. It's like, hey, dude, you use our words every day, like all the time. You
yeah,
don't even know it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I remember I read that, maybe this was part of anthropology in the sense of that when a culture is extinct, and the words for rivers, the words for different places, towns, whatever, regions, are no longer spoken. But in our case, I think, what, like 90% of the rivers in Puerto Rico and Borinquen are in the Taino dialect, you know, Taino
word? Yeah, yeah, a lot of places in Cuba, too, same thing, like,
yeah,
Quisque, yeah, think. Like, yeah, uh-huh, like Guantanamo, Juanma, yeah, all those are, Cuba itself is pretty close to the original Taino word, which was it's spelled C-U-B-A-O, Cubao, which means, like, fertile land or something.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Yeah, like I know Puerto Rico was Boricua, you know, there a lot of them aren't called by what they were called nowadays. But I mean, Haiti is pretty close to Haiti, I would say. Jamaica,
yeah,
is close. So some definitely, yeah, you can always tell the towns that have, and even Havana in Cuba comes from Habana, which they say was an indigenous word as well. But I always just think like the you know, I always tell people, who, especially people when they say they never heard of Taino or what does our language sound like, I'm always like, well, you know what a barbecue is, right? Like, we invented that.
Yeah.
And when you have that word and that concept because of us, hammock, same thing, canoes, even certain fruits like guava, papaya, iguana, also is a Taino word. It's incredible just how much is still, and all that has spread abroad, you know, even outside of the Americas.
You know, I remember growing up as a kid, the women in my family were very strong women, you know, and they didn't back down for anything. And they used to use a term called nacariles when they were upset at the men. And I remember my aunt used to use that a lot, my great aunt, and she would say just like this, nacariles. And she would dress her husband, you know, my great uncle. And then years later, I remember telling Cacique Borihuesh from Taino Nation, who was studying the language at the time, I said, what does this mean, nacariles? And he was like, oh, yeah, that's a phrase we use. It's called, it's like, deja eso, like, leave me alone, like, you know,
really?
Déjame, like.
It's like,
or,
déjame, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, déjame, or like, stop it, you know, like, just stop it.
Pero
just whatever
yeah,
you're saying
like
right
that.
Now, just stop it. And it's called nacariles. So I'm like, whoa, man, they were saying that. Huh?
Say it one more time for me.
Nacariles. Nacariles.
Okay.
Nacariles.
So
like deja
for,
eso,
like, stop
ya.
It?
Like, deja eso, ya. Like, stop that already, you know?
Yeah,
would say nacariles. So that was a translation I got. Like, yeah, so yeah. You know, like, leave that alone. Or stop
That's
talking
so
about
cool.
that. So I was like, what the hell? All this time, I was hearing that, saying nacariles.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
it and I guess I'm assuming you've used it at some point, right?
Yeah, definitely as a kid. And it was another one. It was called, there was a phrase, like when you're bothering someone, they'll be like, no jode la pita, you know, no jode la pita.
Yeah,
you ever heard that?
Yeah,
did you guys
yeah.
say that?
Is that, that's not related to no me jodes, is it?
Similar, at the trend,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, like, because like,
I hear
like, stop
the jode,
that or,
and, yeah, yeah.
Like, stop messing around, right? Like, stop, you know. And then I also learned this, that the pita was actually the knot that used to tie the poles together in a Taino way when they used to tie pole like on wood and
really
I forget what kind of wood, but I assume it was sort of bojillos, but you would tie it up, and the jibaros used that whole technique of the knotting, the knot, and if you didn't tie the knot strong enough, all the poles can fall and it can hurt someone, it can kill you, you know. So I say no jode la pita, don't, you know. Make sure
don't mess around. Don't screw up.
Don't screw up the knot. You know, the pita is the knot. So there you go. You know, this modern, you know, there you go. Ancient with modern, right?
Exactly. You know, it's funny. I now that you're, like, telling me that, I'm thinking, too, like, so my grandmother on my mom's side, we always called her Bibi. And I always thought Yeah. Like my whole, like all my cousins, my siblings, we all called her BB. And I always thought, like, you know, just in my kind of like Western thinking mind, I thought it was because her name was Ibis. And I thought it was just, you know, the kids mispronouncing that, Ibis. But then I learned later that BB is used by a lot of Caribbean people for their mothers and grandmothers. And I was like, huh, okay, so they can't all be, they, yeah, I was like, so they can't all be named BB or Ibis, right? It can't all be that same mistake and spelled the same way, B-I-B-I. And then I come to learn that that is a Taino word for, like, mother or
wow.
Matriarch, you know?
That's amazing.
And I was like, so that makes perfect sense then. We're all calling our grandmother BB, and then I'm talking to other people who do the same, because I was like, well, wait a minute, that's definitely not Spanish, you know, abuela is grandmother. So I just thought that was
totally
just something my family did, you know. I thought it was just us mispronouncing Evie, so...
Totally unreal. This is the cultural continuity, right, in language.
Absolutely, yeah. And so cool. And it's funny because, like, my, you know, I mentioned that to my family, and I was like, do you guys know why we call her and they were just like, no, we just always have, like, you know. And my cousin was like, yeah, I called my grandmother that too, or my, you know, call, and I was like, and once I explained that, they were like, oh, wow, okay.
You know, I forgot to research this, but someone early in the day when I was talking about this show, we're going to do a language, they were talking about the couch. They will always say butaca. They will always say that word, butaca. And that sounds very Taino. You know, I got to look that up.
Yes,
butaca.
It does. That does. Yeah. That's definitely not Spanish.
Right? And we use it all the time, right? You know, like, you know,
right.
Butaca, you know.
Man. Yeah, that definitely sounds, it's got to be Taino or Arawakan at least, I would think, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, it would be cool. Let I mean, we're over time now, but let's follow up on the part two of this, because language is always so important, you know. It's a hot topic, the language.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
and we talked about having some of our language people, you know, like I mentioned, you mentioned Maritza, and she's great for that, because I know she's big with the Hiwayawa language reconstruction, and you said you had someone from Nahuake as well.
Well, I can invite one of the Bejiques from Nahuake. He actually speaks a lot of the language. I can invite him on the show. But also, guess what? I got a response back from Javier Hernandez, the author of Borinqueniki. So he's going to be on the show next week. He said he'll be on the show. So
all right,
Javier,
yeah.
And find out what inspired him to do his. And you know, he also inspired he helped with the alphabet. The Nahuake alphabet. So maybe
that's awesome.
You know, maybe we could expand the show. Maybe we'll start a little earlier and expand maybe a 2-hour show. I don't know if you're open for it, because this is, we'll get the callers to call in. Maybe they can speak
absolutely.
Some of what they know. You know, in the spirit of unity, right?
Yeah. And have everyone, I'm sure people like listening probably have their own stories about, like, you know, like what we were saying, like Taino words we used and never even knew they were Taino, right? Like what you heard from your female relatives growing up, and what, you know, what I heard about what I call my grandma. Like I'm sure a lot of people probably have similar stories that they can say that they can relate to. And yeah, having him on the show will be great. I'd definitely be down for that.
Definitely. And we'll do that. So, man, we ran out of time, man. We always run out of time, right? But this is
we
good.
Always
we always go
do,
over time.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people wanted to call in and speak about it, but next week, let's throw it down to our show.
Absolutely.
And we can keep this momentum. And
yeah, all the call-ins.
Let me see. I have one song that I want to share with everyone. And hold on a second. I'm looking for it. It's a song that...
another language, music.
Right? That's it. The music is the language, right?
Right.
Okay, like I said before.
Universal language.
Yeah, universal language. Hold on. I apologize.
No, no worries.
There is a, let me see. There is a, hold on a second. Okay, 1992. I played as many times in the show. Kind of played out the song. But it was a song by Juan Luis Guerra. And in 1992, when the island was celebrating 500 years of evangelization in Americas and the whole discovery myth, you know, of Columbus.
Right.
You know, he actually dedicated some songs in his new album in 92, Juan Luis Guerra from Dominican Republic. And in this song, Taka Naboria Maya, I can't even talk, Maya Ni Matana. Yeah, man, he talks about, you know, he's throwing down with Taino words. Huh? He put these Taino words together.
That's great.
It's crazy.
All right.
And I'm like,
yeah.
So this is 1992. This is 90 from someone not of the movement, but inspired to write a song in Taino.
That's awesome. It always feels good when you can inspire people outside the community, right?
Yeah. And this song is like, you know, I am the servant. I am the servant of God, and please don't kill me. That's basically the song. So while people are celebrating Columbus.
Oh, yeah. I think I've heard this one before.
Yeah, yeah. I love it. I love it, man. But, you know, it's just if anyone has songs out there who are listening and want to send it to me, I definitely want to dedicate a show on that. You know, just like, you know, music, you know.
Oh, yeah. We got to do a music show.
Yeah. So, all right. So, listen, thank you once again, Natalie, for bringing your knowledge to the table.
Absolutely.
And we're getting great ratings. I mean, thank you all for tuning in, man. A lot of people tuning in to this show.
Awesome.
This Power
people
Hour.
Want to learn, and that's great.
That's it. It's only going to get better, this show. We're really going to, you know, keep going strong. And,
All right.
So, okay, we'll end it here, and we'll share this show. We'll keep sharing it. All shows are archived. So this is Juan Luis Guerra, one of my favorite singers from DR. Taka Naboria Maya Ni Makana. I am the servant. Please don't kill me.
Dale.
Na boreada